This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The Endangered Species Act turns 30 this month. Over the years, it has saved rare plants and animals from extinction, but it also has angered some people by stopping development projects. The act also has transformed the way biologists do field work. In the latest NPR News National Geographic Radio Expedition, Christopher Joyce visits scientists in Florida who have used the act to help preserve one of America's most unusual places.
Hilary Swain is a biologist and Scotswoman who came to America and fell in love with the Florida scrub. To explain why, she climbs 100 feet up an abandoned watchtower.
From up here, I have a fantastic vantage point. And you really have to sort of imagine yourself here 1.5 million years ago.
The Lake Wales Ridge in central Florida is a low spine of land rising a few feet above the flat landscape. Over 1 million years ago, the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico swept inland and flooded everything except this ridge.
We're essentially on the top of a giant sand dune, a great peninsula of huge windswept sand dunes. And I always like to be here because it reminds me of what I often describe the Lake Wales Ridge as. It's really Florida's attic, where we have this assemblage of species and communities found really nowhere else on Earth.
Legless lizards that swim through sand, a grasshopper with pink legs, a spider that spins a golden web, rare creatures in need of protection. Swain runs this place. It's the Archbold Biological Station, almost 9,000 acres of privately held land, preserved amidst the citrus groves and highways. The scrub oaks stand only about 12 feet high, twisted but sturdy. Saw palmetto plants sprout from the sand, spreading fan-like leaves. In this scrub live more than 40 rare species of plants and animals. Many are protected by the Endangered Species Act. One of the most unusual is the Florida scrub jay, a bird whose breeding behavior is more human than bird-like.
That's a territorial call.
Biologist Glenn Wolfenden knows more about the scrub jay than anybody. When the birds see us, he knows just what they'll do.
And that's associated with flying towards the aggressor, towards the intruder, and flying in an undulating way and spreading the tail. And all of that is just to say, here I am, and I'm healthy, and you better get out of here. And they'd much rather do that than fight.
There are only a few thousand scrub jays left, fewer every year. They're sky blue, about the size of a blue jay. But they're different, wary, yet unafraid. They'll eat peanuts right out of your hand. Wolfenden and fellow biologists Reed Bowman and Chris Valenine draw them in by pishing. Then Bowman traps them in a little wire cage baited with peanuts. He needs to band them and track them and measure their mating success to see whether this remnant population might be in trouble.
You know, I spent hundreds of hours in my backyard when I was 12 with a shoebox and a stick, and now I'm 45 and went to graduate school for way too long, and I'm still doing the same thing.
The bird wanting to go in. Go on in. Come on, figure.
She's gonna go. Got her.
Got it.
Go get her, Chris.
Now I've got to get my sheets.
Glenn Wolfenden started studying these birds over 30 years ago because of their unusual breeding behavior. Scrub jays are cooperative breeders. Mating pairs establish a territory and stay put. Their offspring stay with their parents, sometimes for years, and help raise ensuing generations. Wolfenden says they may do it to gain an indirect benefit, to help birds closely related to them survive. Or, for a species where the male needs to find and own his own territory to mate, the benefit could be more direct.
There's no extra habitat. How do you get a space to breed? And we figured out one way to do it is what we call territorial budding, where number one son isolates himself in a piece of the territory that he helped develop as a helper. And there, with a mate from outside, he begins to breed.
Bowman has weighed and measured the captured bird.
Most of the control of the bird is just with these two fingers.
He holds the jay with its head sticking up between his first and second fingers. Its beak is long, black, and sharp.
Now we're going to take a blood sample. So what I'm going to do is extend the wing and expose the brachial vein. I'm going to need sun here. So for the genetic analyses, we need just a tiny amount of blood.
When Wolfenden started this, his main tools were binoculars, peanuts, and bird bands. Now the team uses DNA to identify jay families. Satellite photos and computers create detailed maps of nesting territories. Bowman now tracks scrub jays that live in people's backyards to see how human contact affects them. He says the Endangered Species Act encourages new techniques by demanding more than just classifying and counting.
They don't call it conservation biology for nothing. I mean, what do we need to know? How do these animals make their living? What are the kinds of habitats in which they can successfully make that living? And what were the processes that created that habitat?
To make the act work, biologists must now manage the habitat as well as the animal or plant. For example, the scrub jay cannot tolerate trees that are too tall. They need to scan the sky for hawks that prey on them. They also need patches of open sand where they can bury acorns. Fires used to do that. This is Florida's lightning capital. Fires burned the underbrush and thinned the trees. Now the Archbold staff has to set the fires and make sure they don't escape into nearby housing developments.
Turn it so it's on its back.
It's time to release our bird. Wolfenden, as big as a bear, shows me how to do it the right way, gently.
Then open your fingers. There you go. See? And it goes.
Bye.
People get really lost. It's kind of disorienting. And it's such a flat landscape, there's nowhere to really navigate yourself.
Hillary Swain drives a truck over a rutted path toward the edge of the reserve. She says the Endangered Species Act has helped preserve rare habitats like this. But more important, it's leveled the playing field. It's made grasshoppers and scrub jays the equals of grizzlies and California condors by showing that all wildlife and habitat are part of a web. Break a crucial strand and the whole thing can collapse. Swain stops at a lake at the edge of the reserve, Lake Annie. Though it sits by a highway, Swain says few people even know the lake is there.
So all of us whiz by landscapes without really ever understanding them, or unfortunately without having the time or the number of people around who are knowledgeable about them to really explain them to us.
The sediments at the bottom of Lake Annie are layered with pollen. The pollen records how the Florida scrub has waxed and waned over the millennia. Now it's up to Swain and her crew, with the help of the Endangered Species Act, to keep this unique habitat from waning completely away.
I think it would be extraordinarily arrogant of us to describe ourselves in any way as gods of a landscape like this. We're at best stewards who are still naive and learning about management.
For Radio Expeditions, I'm Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR News and the National Geographic Society. Next week, the fate of the animals that were the first to be declared endangered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.